The Dead Side of the Mic, written and read by Simon Brett.
Chapter 1. Charles Paris paused at the top of the steps leading down to the aerial bar, momentarily unable to see a path through its voluble mass of humanity to the source of alcohol. Mark Lear, with the assurance of a BBC native, plunged into the thicket of people, a rhetorical, "What do you want?" thrown over his shoulder. Rhetorical, because he had known his guest long enough to supply the answer. A large bells. Charles managed to wedge himself against a high ledge just inside the door. It was hot. The weather had suddenly changed, and for the first time that year, in early July, offered the possibility of a summer. Above the babbling surface of heads, he could see the room's fine ceiling, which still boasted the building's ancestry, its luxurious past as the Langham Hotel, where elegance had occasionally reigned and Ouida occasionally entertained guardsmen. But now, the petalled roses and coving of the ceiling had been painted in the institutional colours of a hospital or government office. Proper BBC austerity. By all means, let the staff enjoy themselves, but let them not be seen to enjoy themselves. For a moment, the drab paint over the fine curlicues of the ceiling seemed a symbol of the organisation, of flamboyant creativity restrained by proper civil service circumspection. Still, it was comforting. Charles always felt on BBC radio premises as he did on entering a church. Not that he shared the faith of the celebrants, but that it was reassuring to know such faith still existed. He relaxed. He had found the afternoon a strain. It was always difficult to explain to fellow actors who hadn't done radio why one should feel tension working with the permanent safety net of a script, but total reliance on voice, without any of the rest of an actor's armoury, imposed new anxieties, even when working with a producer as sympathetically cynical as Mark Lear. Mark worked in further education, a department whose exact function and intended audience Charles could never grasp, and that afternoon they had been recording a programme on Swinburne. It was one of a series called Who Reads Them Now, in which various faded literary figures were reassessed to see if they had anything to offer to the modern reader. Not much in most cases. Mark, remembering a feature on Thomas Hood called So Much Comic, So Much Blood, which Charles had written some years previously, had rung and asked if there was anyone he'd like to reassess. The Paris diary, being as unsullied by bookings as usual, and his long-running hare and hounds race with the taxman reaching a point where the latter was no longer going to be fobbed off with any scraps of paper other than banknotes, he assented, mentioning, off the top of his head, Swinburne, whose works he had not glanced at since leaving Oxford nearly 30 years before. He had enjoyed researching and writing the programme. It was a long time since he had become so involved in a project, and after the strains of recording, he felt distantly confident that it had worked. A little enthusiasm insinuated itself into his mind. There was something there. Why shouldn't he turn it into a one-man stage show, as he had with So Much Comic, So Much Blood? Why shouldn't he write more for radio? The basic money really wasn't bad, and always a good chance of repeats. It was just a question of getting himself organised. Simultaneous with this thought arrived what most frequently prevented him from getting himself organised. Mark handed it over. "Cheers. Thanks for doing the programme. I think it really worked." Charles drank gratefully. "Hope so." "No, I felt satisfied with it. All seemed to fit. Came out of the studio feeling we'd really made a programme. Don't often get that. The Beeb puts out so much rubbish these days." "I have to confess I don't listen much." It was true. For a moment, Charles wondered why. The radio would be an ideal companion for those increasingly frequent days when he just mooched round his bedsitter. And yet it was hardly ever switched on. Maybe he didn't want to be distracted from his mooching.